We are Gold Ivy, a health company dedicated to simplifying health and wellness. Tune in as we search to find the deep, real, and raw truth. We're here to talk big, no room for small talk. It is our mission to inspire, seek growth, simplify the action steps, and build confidence.
You decide what works for your daily life and how to transform our lessons into your gold. Are you ready to step into your power? Now is the time. Join us on the fearless pursuit of self-discovery and growth.
This is Ivy Unleashed,
a Gold Ivy production.
If you struggle with digestion, energy, bloat, acne, mood, fatigue, listen up. I spent 4 years, 50 plus doctors, and tens of thousands of dollars to heal my gut so you don't have to. I've created the What to Do guide I wish I had before spending years navigating the overwhelming amount of information and conflicting doctors' opinions out in the gut health world. My help, I can't figure out what's wrong with me. The How to Heal Your Gut Starter Kit is now available, and the response to it online has been incredible. On top of what I wish I would have known, I also wish this information would have been easily accessible for me. Because of that, it's available to you on the shop page of our website for only $9.99. Included in my guide is what helped me and countless others heal their gut, along with chronic fatigue, acne, hormone imbalances, and so much more. You'll learn what foods to stay away from, what foods to eat, a 4-week gut healing eating plan, lifestyle tools to aid your healing process, and 2 of my go-to favorite recipes. So head over to our shop page on our website, goldivyhealthco.com. And remember, happy gut, happy life. You can heal. Let me help you. If you're a regular listener of the show or you follow us on social media, you know I, Brooke, just ran my first marathon and Andrea ran her 22nd state in her goal to run a marathon in every state. How did I go from barely getting out of bed to being able to run 26.2 miles? A customized training plan and coaching with Andrea. With my health concerns, it was important for me to make sure I crossed that finish line safely and confidently.
We are so excited to announce that we are now offering customized training plans. Whether you're wanting to run a 5K, 10K, half, or full marathon, we've got you covered. Get your customized training plan plus coaching to get you race ready and keep you motivated along the way. Prior to receiving your training plan, you will meet with me, Andrea, for a 15-minute call to discuss your goals, race details, and schedule your 3 coaching calls. You will receive a training plan for your race, tailored to your schedule, endurance, and cross-training preferences like yoga, biking, strength, or whatever movement you enjoy.
Coaching throughout your training will provide accountability, safety, and inspiration to keep you pursuing your training and race goals. With Andrea, you will connect your mind and body to maximize your race experience. And if you're looking for a custom training plan without coaching, we're offering that as well. Head over to the shop page on our website, goldivyhealthco.com, to learn more and get you across that finish line. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Ivy Unleashed, and happy Mental Health Awareness Month. If you're a regular listener of the show, you already know this. And if you're new, we don't take mental health lightly around here. It is everything comes back to mental health. And this month specifically, we are showcasing so many important topics, so many important stories that show the power of a healthy mindset and how to cultivate it.
Yeah. And what I'm, the theme of the episodes that we have are like full honesty and transparency about what you're going through. It's like the most powerful thing you can do is tell your honest truth, your honest story. We've had therapists on that are just so honest that, you know, an anxiety therapist that has anxiety, and we found a therapist that's honest about depression. And so welcome to Ivy Unleashed, Alexa Cordry.
Hello. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to be here, guys.
Oh, we're so happy you're here. We met Alexa. We were like, we feel like we've known her for years already just because she has this presence about her. So we can't wait to get into it. But we just want to thank you just from following you on Instagram, your honesty. You know, your handle is Your Sad Therapist, which we love. It's exactly what we were looking for. Just someone to come in and be honest about depression and mental health and its importance. So Alexa, can you tell us a little bit more about your work and your story?
Yes, I would love to. First off, I'm so honored to be here with you ladies. I feel similar kismet from the first time that we talked. So I am a licensed social worker and a licensed clinical alcohol and drug counselor. I work full-time at a mental health and substance use intensive outpatient treatment center. I also see some private clients on the side. And yeah, I can tell you all about what brought me here. You want me to get into it?
Absolutely.
Oh,
we want to hear everything.
So my own personal story that led me to being in the field really is my experience with both mental health and substance use recovery. At 25 years old, I entered into substance use recovery and got sober after about close to 9.5 years trying. So from my early teenage years into the time I was 25, I really struggled with addiction and mental health. And then at age 25, I finally kind of, I always joke, I felt my frontal lobe grow in, because that's when your like head finally clicks together. And I really started seeking recovery and seeking help. So I entered into sobriety. I'll have 6 years sober in September, which is so exciting and wonderful. And I also consider myself in recovery from depression, which is where my Instagram handle comes from. Because once I put the, it's like a chicken or the egg. Once I put the substances down, up came the depression. Turns out the substances were a coping skill for the depression the whole time. And that was really interesting. So losing my best friend, which were substances at the time, really kicked me off. And, you know, me and my husband were just joking today because I run a lot now. I'm an avid runner. It's a big part of my mental health routine. I know you guys are runners too. Mm-hmm. But he was like, man, you should have seen 2018, Alexa. And I was like, oh yeah, she loved to sleep. And he was like, no, like you physically couldn't get out of bed. Like you couldn't, you didn't have a choice of whether or not you were going to sleep. So I was like really deep into depression around that time and went through my own kind of healing journey. Part of that was becoming a therapist myself and learning how to tailor my therapy to young women who suffer from depression and addiction. It's kind of my niche.
I love that. I love how there's purpose in your pain. It's your message in the mess. I always say that about my healing journey. And, you know, depression, I think it's something that's scary to talk about because there's kind of that unknown, right? Like, am I a depressed person? Am I having a depressive episode? Like, what even is depression?
Am I feeling depressed?
Yeah. So can we kind of like just start off with clarifying, like, what is depression?
Yes, I would love to. Depression is a mental health or mood disorder that's primarily characterized by a depressed mood, i.e. feelings of worthlessness, fatigue, hopelessness, persistent sadness, that impacts our ability to enjoy pleasure or find pleasure in things we once found pleasure in. And the kicker with that is that it has significant impairment in your life, right? So if we're just going from diagnostic criteria, depression is major depressive disorder in the diagnosis and statistical manual 5. Can never say that right. DSM-5 is what we call it. For someone to be diagnosed with major depressive disorder, they need to show symptomology that occurs for 2 weeks persistently, and the primary symptoms have to be at least depressed mood or significant decrease in activities you once enjoyed, so loss of pleasure. But there is a slew of other symptoms that I don't think a lot of people think about when they think about depression. They think about like, oh, I'm sad, or like, aren't we all a little depressed? And it's totally different than that. It's significant weight loss or gain. It's a slowing down of motor function, speaking slower, moving slower to the point where other people notice it, fatigue, loss of energy, feelings of worthlessness, excessive guilt, recurrent thoughts of suicide, plans, means, or attention for suicide, aches and pains, ruminating thoughts. Like, it really goes on and on. And I don't know if you notice anything like specific about the symptomology while I'm talking about it. What are you guys thinking?
I'm just thinking how it can be. I'm thinking of people like celebrities and people that I've known in my life that have committed suicide that seemed very happy. They mm-hmm. seemed fine. They had money or they had a family, and that it's not just you can't get out of bed. Sometimes you have these thoughts people don't see or realize, and that it can show up a lot of different ways that you might be unaware of.
Yeah. What an amazing observation, because depression really is in the major depressive disorder is in the absence of an external stressor, right? So there's something called an adjustment disorder, which is another DSM-5 diagnosis that's very similar to depression. It's basically like shorthand for situational depression with an external stressor, a trauma, loss of a relationship, loss of a family member. You may go through adjustment disorder and have similar symptomology to depression, but major depressive disorder tends to be in the absence of an external stressor, which will drive you bananas, because the old adage of like, you have nothing to be sad about is like, I know I have nothing to be sad about. That's kind of why this is maddening. And a lot of people just learn to cope or mask through so many different ways, just because it can be so isolating to be in a space of depression. So when you talk about celebrities who look like they have it all together, they probably do have it all together. That's what makes depression so hard, you know?
I wonder if it just makes it even worse, you know, when you do have all the things or the money or the beautiful family and you still feel that way. You know, it's got to be, like you said, maddening. It's got to be, just makes you even harder on yourself. Like, why can't I feel better? Why can't I get out of this cycle of feeling so down?
Is there a cause underneath it? Like, is it the chemistry of our brain? Like, what causes depression?
Little column A, little column B, right? We have the biochemistry component, which is like, maybe we don't have enough serotonin, dopamine, in which case SSRI medication, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, could really help us increase our brain chemistry and get to a level place with our depression. It's also nurture in a lot of ways. Trauma can cause depression. Not being consistently seen or heard as a child, different situations. It could be an external factor causes sadness, which then morphs into depression, right? I never want to say it's strictly brain chemistry, because then the idea becomes like, oh, I just get the medication and then I feel better, which is a huge part of it. Don't get me wrong. But if we've been experiencing depression, whether it's brain chemistry or not, for a specific amount of time, it will begin to alter the way that our brain functions. And it takes specific healing to kind of learn how to rewire your brain from that point forward. Another thing about these symptoms that I find so interesting is depression is such a physical disorder. And it's funny, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. And I feel like people primarily talk about mental health from the context of like a negative lens, like, oh, I'm struggling with my mental health, or, oh, I had to seek treatment for my mental health, rather than like, I'm tuning up on my mental health. But the physicalness of depression is something that I find so striking, that like your motor function gets impacted. You have dull aches and pains. It's really hard for you to sleep. You can't concentrate in conversations. So we talk so much about physical health and we go to the doctor twice a year. But if we don't take care of our mental health or maintain consistency with our mental health, we are going to end up having issues with our physical health.
Absolutely. And that's why here at Ivy Unleashed and the work that Andrew and I do, it's both. It's connecting the mind and body, because they are so linked, and you can't have one without the other. Like, you run, you get endorphins, your head feels better, and vice versa. You meditate and then your body feels better. You don't have these aches and pains. You know, it's still such an overwhelming topic. Like, I think breaking it down like this is super helpful. But to someone who's like, I have that symptom. Like, am I depressed? Like, what would you say to those people that these thoughts are going through their head right now?
Sure. It's persistence and impairment are the two things that I would think about. Are these symptoms, are they multiples? Are you having five or more? And has it been persistent over a period of time? The other half of that is, what is your functioning looking like, right? Can you enjoy the things you once enjoyed? Can you get up and go to work? Which I don't want to say that people with depression don't get up and go to work, but like, looking at those markers in your life, are you able to engage in them successfully? If there is severe, moderate, mild impairment in the way that you were functioning in your life, this is probably a time where we want to start to think about, should I get professional help? And I can talk a little further later on about the difference between depression and sadness, because it's two totally different things.
Yes, I can't wait to get into that. But I do have a question about noticing what's going on with yourself, like that self-awareness piece, right? Because if you're in a shitty relationship or you hate your job or, you know, maybe one of your parents passed away a couple years ago and like there's these lingering things and getting yourself to that place where, what do I enjoy? Like, am I even incorporating that? Like, am I just sad because of my situation? Mm-hmm. I need to get out of it. I need a different job. I need to get back to what I do. Like, I'm a new mom that my hormones are wacky, or I'm going through menopause and I'm like, I just think sometimes it's so hard to know based off of your life circumstances. You know, I think about like Brooke and I too, we talk about leveling up your life and chasing your dreams and all these things. But if you're depressed, of course, like that sounds like bullshit. Like, no, like I don't know.
Yeah. There's like a lot of things that you can justify feeling like shit. Mm-hmm. Like for me and my health, it was, well, of course, like I don't feel well. Of course I'm anxious and I'm tired because my gut is off. But also I think that I am depressed because I haven't felt this way. I can't get out of bed. Even if my stomach doesn't hurt, I don't feel like I can get out of bed. So like there's that confusion, I think, is kind of what I'm hearing Andrea say. So yeah, Alex, I'd love to know your opinion.
Yeah. Again, I want to go back to persistence being key. Are these symptoms enduring over time? But I do think like you will experience all of these symptoms at different times in your life, maybe not clustered together and maybe not persistent over time. But what makes depression is the wide variety of symptoms, the way it impacts your functioning and the way that it endures. So if you're feeling fatigue and worthlessness, that could be tied to an external circumstance, or you may have the emotional regulation skills, which I'll talk about in sadness versus depression, like to be able to ground yourself, work through that, reach for tools that you need. You know, when I get clients in my chair that are like, here are the 85 things that are wrong with me. Like, you need to tell me what's happening. The first thing we do is slow down, like slow down. Let's get to the root of what we're feeling right now, so we can apply some really basic action steps to get you to a place where we can look at this with more objective view. Because it's really easy, especially if you're into mental health and mental wellness, to then like psych yourself up into being like, oh God, I have every disorder. And a lot of what we're experiencing is just regular, normal human life. You know, you're going to have fatigue, dull aches and pains, guilt, like you're going to have that stuff throughout your life. Persistence and enduring symptoms that impacts our quality of life again and again is when we're going to look more towards major depression.
Looking for a natural way to reduce stress and anxiety? I have to tell you about what I found. For the past year, I've been using an incredible product, Pure Finn's CBDA oil. If you've tried CBD before, or you're looking for a more effective product, this is it. The difference between CBD and CBDA is that CBDA is a more raw, less processed, more potent oil that is closer to the natural plant state than CBD. And Purefin's specific oil has added omega-3s. And I can tell the difference. Purefin's oil and topical products have been helping me with my chronic pain, inflammation, and anxiety more than anything I've tried. And I can't encourage you enough to try it yourself.
Purefin is a family-owned business started by Tracy and Sierra, a father-daughter duo. During Tracy's health journey of overcoming cancer, he had limited solutions to help him heal and live life to the max. Through his journey of healing, Full Spectrum Hemp quickly emerged as an integral part of his wellness protocol, and now it is Purefin's mission to simply help every person reach a higher level of wellness. Whether you're looking to reduce your anxiety, improve your sleep, boost your immunity, add more omega-3s into your routine, or simply reduce your stress level, Purefin CBDA products are the way to go.
So head over to our show notes for more information on Purefin, and use promo code GOLDIVY, one word, for 10% off when you check out from their website, purefinshop.com. That's purefinshop.com. purefinshop.com. You will not regret using this high-quality, life-changing CBDA oil.
What you just said was so powerful, just even that image of somebody sitting in a chair and slowing down with a professional.
it's just so valuable because you can feel down because you've jam-packed your life full of way too much stuff. We all do it. And it's like you're running and you're racing and people are asking too much of you and your job's too this. And it's like all of, and with the pandemic, it's like all of these things on you that weren't before. And so just imagining someone taking a hot second in your chair to just sort through it. You know, maybe they aren't depressed. Maybe they just are sad. And so I would love for you to get into that and kind of how to navigate. Am I just sad? Is this just temporary? Like, how do I know? Mm-hmm. And how you kind of work through that.
Yeah. Sadness. I love sadness. And it's funny. One of your questions was like, how do you make this like not your identity? Which I do really want to talk about further. But I have really integrated sadness into my identity as a way to cope with my depression. It's why my Instagram handle is Your Sad Therapist. I have a gold-plated necklace that says like sad. I've got like embroidered clothing that say like sad girl.
it is your identity.
But it's funny because it's like part of that integration of the normalcy of experiencing sadness is what set me free. I think specifically with people who have depression, the experience of sadness is so scary. I know for me, when I was starting to enter into depression recovery, when I would feel sad, I'd be like, oh no, here it goes again. I'm not ready. Is this going to be a month? Am I going to be in bed again? But sadness is a really normal human experience for us to have. Like, we will experience sadness in conjunction with our happiness at like a 1-to-2 ratio. Like, we're going to feel it all the time. We're going to be disappointed. Someone's going to let us down. We're going to not get the job we wanted, or someone's going to pass away. Like, we are going to experience the depth of human emotion. And if we don't experience the sadness, we can't have perspective for the joy either. So when you can kind of learn how to hold hands with your sadness rather than be like, something is wrong with me for experiencing sadness, is when you can really start to integrate that. Again, sadness is typically an external factor that's causing that to happen. We have a primary event. I have a reaction to it. It's causing me to feel sad. Sometimes it doesn't feel as cut or dry as that because like so much operates underneath the surface with us based on our prior life experience. So you may have a day where you're like, why do I feel sad today? Could be your subconscious taking over, could just be a sad day. And I feel like I keep saying the same thing about depression. Depression is enduring, persistent, deep. I don't even know that I would use the word sadness to describe depression because depression feels numb. Mm-hmm. It is the absence of feeling a lot of the times. Other than feeling the worthlessness or the excessive guilt, a lot of the time it is like a complete blank. So for me, with my depression, like, I typically wasn't an excessive crier. I would just go numb. It would physically hurt for me to get up and shower. It was just like the most energy in the world was required. That's not my experience with sadness. Sadness is like, oh man, this doesn't feel great. And now that I've done so much work on myself, I'm kind of like, ooh, what is this teaching me? Like, how cool that I'm having this experience with my emotions. I'm a total therapist now. The simplest way to do it is to say like sadness is more external forces. Depression is more internal and persistent.
Yeah, that feeling too. I think that's powerful. Knowing you're still going to feel it. You're going to feel joy, or you're going to feel like, damn, that sucks. Mm-hmm. That deep depression is no emotion, or just I don't even have the energy to feel sad. It just is like mundane, or is what it is.
Yeah, I keep thinking too about when you're in that state, like you mentioned, that like not wanting to get out of bed or it's too hard to shower, hearing from someone like, you need professional help, this will help you. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have the will or like the hope for anything, right? If you're that
or the
numb.
Energy to even want to do therapy or to reach out to someone, even though you know you need help, because there's that like that guilt and that shame of they have their own thing going on. Mm-hmm. I can get through this.
Right. So maybe someone that's listening that isn't seeing a therapist, right? And they're in that state, or they know someone that's in that state. Like, what words do you have for them where you have nothing to give?
I would say to them, I need you to give 0.0001%. accountability and consistency is going to save your life. So if that 0.001% is walking up and taking a shower, that's enough. If that means sending a text to a friend that says, like, not doing good, that's enough. It's tough because I think one of my favorite things about working with depressed clients is celebrating the small. Like, damn, you cleaned your room? Hell yeah. Like, we cleaned our room this week. This is a huge deal. We're having a big celebration about this. Like, celebrating the small movements. But if we are going to be active in our recovery journey, we do need to give the smallest step. Everything in your body will tell you not to do it. Everything in your body will tell you that you can't do it. Do it anyway. Do it anyway. Like, that's the turning point. And for me, a big turning point for me was like, I'm sad. I might just be a sad girl forever. I'm done fighting the war to make the sadness go away. A big part of change for me is when I started doing my life in spite of it and kind of carrying my sadness with me. And it's crazy what happened when I stopped fighting so hard against it and was just like, all right, I'm sad. Like, I just be sad sometimes, but I still got to go take a shower. And like, I can't emphasize enough the necessity of a support system during this. I had my husband and my family before that. And like, I got the experience of like my husband coming to my bedside and saying like, I don't know how to help you and you're scaring me. And just hearing that from someone I loved so much was enough to be like, oh, I got to go see a therapist again. Like, I got to go talk to someone because now I'm scaring my husband and I love my husband to death, you know? Mm-hmm.
So what I'm curious is like these small steps that you took, because maybe by you explaining it, listeners and us as well can be like, okay, yes, these small victories, these small wins, what do those look like one after the other? So Alexa, can you walk us through, your husband's at your bedside. He's like, you're scaring me. You know, you need to get help. What are the next steps that followed for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So self-awareness. And I think my husband really helped with that. Because I needed someone to reflect to me, like, hey, this isn't normal. I was still going to work at this time, working 8 hours a day, coming home and getting right back in bed. And I was doing that for probably like 2 months. I spent the majority of my time in bed. And when I was in work, I was like in a fog. So by him granting me that perspective, I was able to take those smaller steps, which is why the necessity of a support system is so important, because like people often see it before you do. It's also why it's important to be educated on the warning signs of depression. But for me, what I did at the time, I didn't have insurance. So, and this is a great thing for anybody that wants to get a therapist but is struggling financially or doesn't have insurance. I sought out therapists that were either interning or offered sliding scale rates through Psychology Today and a few other platforms I can't remember. I was lucky enough to, there's a mental health center right by my house. I found an intern that charged $40 a session, no insurance. It was totally accessible for me. So I committed to going to therapy once a week. At that time, I was not on any medication, but just the action of going to therapy and integrating movement was enough to kind of keep me going. And it's hilarious because my mom used to always say to me, like, just go for a walk. And I'd be like, I'm just going to be depressed outside. Like, please stop telling me to go for walks. But to her credit, when I started fighting against that urge and allowed myself to integrate movement, and what I mean by that is like, some days it was not getting back in bed. Other days it was doing a walk around the block, taking my dog to the park, learning how to do really, I didn't start running until last year. Like, this is like ninja level, the running stuff that I'm doing now. And then as time went on, I stayed consistent with therapy. I got really honest with my support system and I was taking those small movement steps. I was able to get the confidence to apply for a new job that offered me health insurance. So then I was able to get on psychiatric medication. There are ways to meet with someone with a sliding scale rate to get on medication if that's what you want to do. But when I got on psychiatric medication, that was when everything changed for me. Like, I could organically start to feel joy again. It wasn't taking as much effort for me to do like my movement, work, therapy support system, like that was still taking a lot of work. So the medication was the thing that really clicked in place for me and allowed me to experience and implement more things and give me just enough energy to be able to kind of suss it out. Meanwhile, I'm doing talk therapy. I'm doing trauma work. I'm learning coping skills. I'm in school to be a therapist myself. So that's offering a lot of tools and self-discovery. And it all started with self-awareness and the willingness to like take just a few tiny action steps.
Yeah. And I love too that you had the accountability with your husband. I think if you are in that dark place thinking of who do I feel the most comfortable just checking on me, like who won't annoy the crap out of me, like who won't judge me, who do I feel like I can be honest with, you know? And I do think if you're depressed that you need that person that you can have that talk with. Like, I'm actually thinking really dark thoughts and I need you to know, and because I just promised you I would tell someone and you promised me you would tell me, you know. I know people that kind of have that partner, and it sounds so dark, but it prevents suicide. You know, it's knowing that, you know, I can call them. We promised this and I'm feeling it. So I'm going to call or I'm going to text, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's important to note too, that if you're ever having active thoughts of suicide, your hospital has a local crisis center that you can go to at any time. I know that there's like three within driving distance of my house right now. Like, hospitals are prepared for that. So if you ever feel like you're in an active crisis, I've done this before when my depression was really bad. I've driven myself to the local crisis center and been like, I'm not safe. And they'll give you a crisis evaluation. They'll determine if you need to spend a few days in the hospital. So that's an immediate resource that everybody has if they need it.
So what do you look up like crisis center in the hospital that is closest to you?
I would say crisis center, city, state.
Okay.
And then see where it takes you.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. So if you show up and they decide that you need to stay, what does that typically look like?
It varies so much state by state. I know in New Jersey, they can do a 72-hour hold if you're saying like, hey, I'm going to harm myself. So typically you would do 72 hours. Sometimes you can do up to a week in kind of a psychiatric unit where you're able to get access to medication. You're able to see a psychiatrist. You're able to meet with a therapist and kind of then take action steps for what aftercare would look like. I work in an intensive outpatient setting for mental health and substance use. And that's basically not the highest level of care, but a higher level of care outside of just like seeing a therapist once a week. You can come, you can do group therapy for up to 9 hours a week. You can see an individual therapist, see a med provider, see a case manager. Those types of centers are really, really helpful when you're having more high acuity mental health.
What about people that don't want to take any medication, but they are feeling suicidal?
I would say that medication is a deeply individualized choice, and there is no research that says take this pill and you won't be suicidal anymore. Medication really works for me. It's not a part of everybody's journey. I always say that medication's like this. This is so bad for a podcast, but picture a line at the bottom, and that's your base, and that's your depression. And then picture a line about 10 inches up, and that's your happiness or stability. Medication brings us about 2 notches up from that baseline. And there is still a huge gap between stability and depression. It gives us just enough energy to begin to implement more organic coping skills to deal with our mental health. So it is by means not the end all be all. It is just one piece of the pie. And it's not a piece of everybody's pie. There are a lot of organic ways in talk therapy, holistic healing, in movement for you to start to deal with chronic passive suicidal ideation and get to a place of stability.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, because it's not just take the pill and you're good. Like, it's work. It is the maintenance. And for me, like, I didn't want to be on medication, and I had tried it before and I'd got off, and I tried it and I got off. But when I realized, like, I don't have to be on this forever, but it can get me to a point where I feel like I can get out of bed. I can work out. I can do these things naturally that I know are going to help. But I need to get to that point first where I don't feel like I'm dying. Yes. So just being open to the idea, knowing that it isn't long term, knowing that it's going to take a lot of work, but that there is light at the other side of the tunnel. But you don't have to do it. You know, it's like, it's an option. You can have it in your toolkit if you want. And I think it takes being open and looking into it, knowing that you don't have to be on it forever. But if you really are struggling, it is an option. And there's so many different ones that you can try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess my question is around the starting of a medication. Mm-hmm. I know it takes like a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks sometimes for medications to like stabilize you. So what is that like? Is it different for every medication or, you know, what's your experience with that?
I can talk about my experience. I do want to note, I am not a psychiatric provider. Mm-hmm. I do not prescribe medication. So anything that I say, please, listeners, do not take me as the authority. Typically, most medications, SSRIs, take about 4 to 6 weeks to kick in. My experience has been that's pretty much what's happened with me. I normally slowly start to, one day I'm just kind of like, oh, wow, I'm handling this situation differently than I used to. So in the interim, you know, when we're waiting for medication to kick in, it's a really good idea to get your, like, I always call it the coping skills bucket, like picture that you have a bucket, fill it up with a bunch of different types of way to cope, ways to get through it, make a safety plan. Who can I call? Who can I go to? Where's my local crisis center? What are my protective factors? Like, do I have running? Do I have a positive social support network? So really game planning out what it would look like and how you would handle a crisis is an important thing to do while we're waiting for medications to kind of help us along the way.
Love that. And since then, since you've kind of stabilized, this was, you said 2018 that you were in this low. Mm-hmm. What have you done to keep your mental health in a space that feels healthy, that feels like I'm in a good spot and I'm not crashing and burning anymore?
I think the coolest thing was learning what it is I like to do. And Brooke had said that earlier, kind of like, what do I want to do to take care of myself? Do I even know what I like? So going through therapy was a good way for me to identify like what coping skills worked for me and what didn't. I am an introvert, a very extroverted introvert, but I value my alone time like so, so much. That's a crucial component of my mental health routine. So like I can't, my free time is not my available time. I'm free one night a week. I might be available every night that week, but I'm free to hang out one time a week. And that really works for me. Some people get their energy from other people. I don't. Running and exercise have been a huge part of my mental health routine. And I wouldn't even call it exercise. I would say like moving my body in ways that allow me to get a sense of body awareness. How am I feeling? How does this make me feel? Working on my nutrition, my sleep hygiene. I go to bed at like 9:30 every night. This is really stretching it for me to be talking to you guys right now.
We're honored.
Yeah. So that all started again with a sense of self-awareness of like, what do I need personally to stay on track? When I started entering into depression recovery and substance use recovery, I had no sense of my body. I couldn't tell you how my body felt. I couldn't tell you what foods made me feel bad. I couldn't tell you what movement felt like. I was so deeply disconnected from the body I was living in. And over time, doing trauma work and working with a therapist and really honing in on like, what does my body feel like? It became a lot easier for me to start to identify like, ooh, this makes me feel bad. This makes me feel good. Like the mind-body connection in my personal opinion is like such an important piece of it. So now I've got this like really stable routine. I go to my cool little gym 3 to 4 times a week. I wake up at 6 a.m. every day. I don't binge eat like I used to cope with my emotions. I'm really mindful about like what feels good and what feels bad. I have like a core group of friends, like 3 of them that I talk to on a regular basis. And I have a great relationship with my husband. But I think the cooler thing out of all of it is that like, I know how to regulate and name my emotions today. So if I'm feeling sadness, I can kind of put my hand on my heart and be like, okay, where's this coming from? What is this trying to teach me? How do I need to cope right now? And from getting that awareness with my body and my emotions, kind of able to tailor like what a routine looks like for me.
I love what you just said, because it's like you got to name it to tame it, mm-hmm. or however you want to say it. But I think sometimes there's this fear, like you mentioned earlier, of feeling the sadness. Like, what's going to happen if I actually allow this feeling to take over? What's going to happen? Am I going to start crying and there's people around, or am I going to lash out if I actually tap into this anger? Like, why am I angry? Like, where is that coming from? If you start to just normalize that with, you know, like I have 3 kids and so I do this all day long of, wow, you're really feeling frustrated. Wow, what's frustrating you? Where did that come from? You know, and they just take a second and they can pinpoint it, because it's like, why wouldn't you just allow yourself to feel it? And what do you think that is that makes us afraid mm-hmm. of feeling it?
Social conditioning. Normally the way we were conditioned growing up is a really big part of it. We are in a hustle culture, grind culture. The fact that we have to have a mental health awareness month still in 2022, like, I think that we are told to compartmentalize and work through the things that feel even a shred uncomfortable. And I don't mean work through like productively. I mean like get through it.
Suck it up, buttercup.
Suck it up. And what we end up doing is, and so what you're doing with your children is so amazing, because we've raised several generations of people who are just like, oh my God, I'm feeling something negative. I must be dying, you know, rather than like, hey, you're having a normal human experience. Because I could physically tell when I started to understand my emotions, like 3 years ago, when I was able to be like, oh, something's happening right now that, and I'm not externalizing it. I'm not going like, wow, they're the problem, or why would they say that to me, or I'm being attacked. Like, it was like, ooh, something organically, like I'm having an experience and I want to look at that a little more.
I think it's so easy to blame external circumstances, right?
Or to suppress it.
Yeah, my boss is a dick. My husband's not cleaning the house as much as I want. My kids are driving me crazy. Of course but it's so true. When your internal world, when you're aware of it, you're aware of how you've been conditioned, you're aware of your childhood, you're aware of where these things, and it's typically a pattern. Like mm-hmm. we have these kind of recycled thoughts and then emotions and feelings. And I think once you start to practice that, noticing, where's that coming from?
Yeah. And also the getting back into your body. Like, I resonated so much when you were talking about that, Alexa, because for me, it was years of being so disconnected with my body that now, because of the work that I've done and the coming back home in my body, like, it feels off and I know immediately how to switch it back on. Or I get really frustrated. Like this last Saturday, we had a photo shoot and I just went downhill, and Andrea and my other cousin-in-law could tell that I was so upset. They're like, what's going on? And before I'd be like, it's fine, I'm fine, whatever. And now I'm like, I'm really frustrated. And by just saying that, by just naming it and letting it go, and then talking to myself and giving myself that compassion of course you're frustrated. Okay, feel it. And now what can you do moving forward? And allowing your body to just relax and to kind of sit with that feeling is scary, because it doesn't feel good. But knowing that it'll pass, and I think that was the biggest thing for me, is feelings, they come and they go, right? You're not always going to be happy. You're not always going to be sad. It is a part of that human experience. But to have that awareness, it sounds so simple, but it's so powerful. And something that I've been saying to myself lately is like, keep it stupid simple. Like, kiss. I heard it on a podcast and now I'm like sticking to it. Like, your routine, like everything you're saying, Lux, like, it's so simple. It's what we have our kids do. Like, go back to keeping it simple, this hygiene routine. Pick a couple of things that you know make you feel like you. You have some fun in there, but you're also taking care of yourself and slowing down. Circling back to the start of this conversation, like, for me, that was the piece of it. I thought if I slowed down, that's when the depression hit. That's when I couldn't get out of bed. It had to be go, 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 so that I could, like, being go, go, go was my vice. Like, instead of the alcohol or the drugs, like, that was my way to numb and to not, like, sit and be like, shit, like, I don't have joy in doing anything right now. I just process verbally for
I love it. Well, I wanted to ask Alexa, because I love what you were saying of becoming aware of your feelings. And I love hearing when people do that. Like, do you have reflection time? Mm-hmm. Do you just pause in the midst of it? Like, what do you do, Alexa?
Yeah, it's so funny because this conversation has morphed into one of the gold stars I'm going to give at the end of this episode. But yeah, this is ninja level work in my experience when it comes to like learning to understand our emotions. When we can pause, I pause. That's a big thing I do. Mm-hmm. So I will feel it bubble up. Typically, I can tell the difference between my anxiety and my intuition. My anxiety is urgent, racing thoughts, elevated heartbeat. If I don't solve this right now, I'm going to die, right? My intuition doesn't feel that way. It never has. My intuition is grounded. It's strong. It takes its time. That's the body awareness cues, right? So when I feel the urgency rise up in me, I'm now able to connect that to my mind, pause and say like, ooh, this is not coming from an authentic place. This is coming from an insecure and anxious place. We need to get out of our chair and go walk around the building. Like if I'm at work, which is like, I'm a professional in a career. I'm also like in leadership at my company. So the imposter syndrome and the insecurity and all of that, like learning how to navigate in a professional sphere was really interesting for me to tap into like the decision-making I'm making there. So like, when do I need to get out of my chair, go for a walk around the building, think a little more critically, or when do I have to start the 24-hour clock, which is like, I know that this decision is coming out of a place of urgency. Alexa, you can't make a decision for 24 hours. You need to sit with this. You need to sit in it. But man, did that take like serious training of just like making bad decisions over and over again until eventually I was like, there seems to be a common thread here. Seems like I always regret these decisions when I'm feeling this way. And that's kind of how I've traced it back over time.
Yeah, it's like the awareness, the work, and then the work again to figure out the awareness. Like, I think something that's been helpful for me is like, it's never ending. Like, I'm not going to get to a point. Like, I'm not healed. I'm healing. I'm forever learning and growing. And like, as long as I keep doing that, I'm succeeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of it like an experiment. Okay, what didn't go well yesterday? Let's tweak that. What did go well? Let's keep that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Mm-hmm. Keeping that cycle going. That's a good point though. I mean, I think, you know, you think eventually I'll be happy. Eventually, once I get through this stage, I'm going to feel so happy. Like, you know, and then you get there, but you never get there. Like you mm-hmm. say, you never get there. So how do you know you're doing okay with your mental health? Like what would be some things to notice if you feel like, okay, I'm on track and I have nothing really to worry about here. This is normal.
Yeah. For me, it is not the absence of negative feelings, which is kind of the most wonderful thing. It's that I can experience any emotion and feel grounded and trusting in that space because you're just not going to eliminate negative experiences. It's not about happiness. It's about stability, right?
I love that. Yes. Say that again. That is powerful.
It's not about happiness. It's about stability. Right? Can I stand on stable ground regardless of what comes my way? Also tapping into the things that like give me joy. Am I experiencing joy? I experience joy when I go to bed at 9 p.m. with my book.
Amen.
Damn, I love this. I love being like older now and really enjoying this. I crave it throughout the day, that time to myself. I love when I go to work and I get to supervise people and like they look to me as a leader and they respect me and they like me. Like I take great joy in that. I love that I have a support system that feels so safe to me that I can tell them literally anything and know that that's going to be held or I'm going to be called out if I need to be called out. Like I've slowly built these things up over time and I am in no way a guru. Like girl, I have my days. Like, I really, really do. But I think of my relationship with my husband, which is like, we are recently married. It's only, you know, he was my boyfriend back when he found me at the bedside. But like, we've never raised our voices at each other. We don't call each other names. Like, I intentionally sought out that relationship with a person who would like fit in my mental health routine, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So now I don't have to worry like that I'm going to have external factors coming in and messing with me. Like, my life is set up to keep me in a place of stability until the next destabilizing event comes, because it will. And then I'll probably have to recalibrate a little bit.
Does that ever give you anxiety to think about what could happen in your life that could knock you on your ass again?
No.
Because I have these moments sometimes where, because I, when I was in high school, I lost two friends back to back. And just throughout my life, I've lost a ton of family members and some really tragic with suicides or accidents. And it's been a lot. And so something happens in me sometimes where I'm fine and I'm grateful and I'm positive and whatever. And then I have this moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, like we're all going to die and life is so short. And like, are we really just going to be dust? No, I have faith, you know, and I like lose my mind. I think sometimes life is so fragile to think of like losing someone close to me, which is going to happen. I get so anxious about it. So I'm just curious for my sake, how you talk your clients through those feelings of like, that could make me depressed. I'll probably fall into depression when one of my parents die. Like, how am I going to cope with that?
Yeah, I don't mean to immediately just say no, because that was my life for 12 years, consistently anticipating when the other shoe was going to drop. And when I talked earlier about the integration of our negative feelings, like once I made that a practice for me, my fear went away, because I understood like there is no such thing as consistent happiness in this world. I'm in recovery. So I never want to say like, oh, I'm never going to drink again. I'm never going to use drugs again. Like, that would be a dumb thing for me to think. I do need to be vigilant to my disorders in the same way that I need to be vigilant to my depression and my mental health. But I so firmly believe that I have the tools I need to continue to get through everything. It sounds like part existential crisis that you're having and part like truly like racing thoughts, projections about the future. Like, I'm going to ground you in the present. That's the answer. Okay. Anchoring in the present is necessary for processing, right? So what you're doing there is you're future tripping a little bit for good reason. Stuff is going to happen to you and you're going to have to deal with it in the future. But as your therapist, it's my job to anchor you in the present so you can like experience the joy that currently surrounds you.
Oh my gosh.
She's telling you, you got to meditate, girl.
I'm going to rewind the last minute of what you just said when I'm having those moments. Like, okay, yep. Like you want to be where your feet are. Yeah. Like, you're going to miss life. You're going to have a terrible life if that's all you're thinking about. Probably going to die a lot sooner too. You're going to be the one that gives other people the sadness because you're going to die by the time you're 40 because you're freaking out about dying. Thank you for listening to me on that.
I love that you brought up the present moment though, because it is true. Like, you know what they say, when you're depressed, you're thinking about the past. When you're anxious, you're thinking about the future. Is that something you believe?
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. My depression spanned time and space. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do think when we're talking about symptomology, like excessive guilt and mm-hmm. worthlessness is really, really rooted in our past. So I think you're right. And anxiety is like racing thoughts, mm-hmm. imagining outcomes. Like, I definitely can buy that. Though I would say like in my depression, I was depressed in the future and depressed in the past. So
yeah.
I also have a very personal relationship with depression.
Yeah, I think it's just the importance of the now and, okay, how am I feeling right now? Is it a feeling? Can it pass? What can I do right now? Can I stir up some things, shake it out, movement? I think being where your feet are can be really powerful, but can also be confusing as to, is this a part of me? Like, you'd kind of mentioned the identity of being sadness. Some people say don't identify with it because then it does become you and it becomes attached to you. So to say like I'm experiencing depressive thoughts or emotions, like I'm curious what you kind of think about that idea.
Yeah, I think it's, a deeply personal choice about like how you want to self-identify and what makes most sense for you. I have clients that get in my office that are like, what is my diagnosis? Until I know what my diagnosis is, I'm not going to feel comfortable. I have other clients that come in my office and say, I don't want to know your thoughts on my diagnosis. Diagnosis makes me feel trapped. It makes me feel like I'm labeled. So for some people, getting that label of like major depressive disorder is incredibly freeing. For other people, getting it is incredibly cagey. So like, you need to make the choice about like how you want to self-identify. for me, I was one of those people that felt really freed by my diagnosis, which is part of the reason I like literally started to integrate sadness into my identity, not depression, sadness, because sadness is a very, very normal thing. But yeah, I do think it is important that you know that you are not your depression. You are not your diagnosis. There is something happening to you. You are experiencing an illness. Because when we wrap ourselves into like, I'm a depressed person, we start to normalize our symptomology. And that 0.001% of change I needed you to have earlier doesn't become possible, because this is who I am to my core fundamentally, right? So it is important. Integration is so important for you to like recognize, like, these are my symptoms. This is what I experience. Help educate your family and friends. But when we cross the line into like, I'm just depressed all the time, is when we do need to step back and say, like, my depression is not me. But for someone saying, like, rather like hearing, I have depression symptoms, or I'm experiencing a depression episode, like, do you? Mm-hmm. Like, what feels most authentic to you? You get to self-identify what that's going to look like in your life.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing is, like, whatever makes you feel like you're empowered to do something about it, to get out of that state. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. I love that. Thank you for explaining that. Of
course. Just thinking from my personal experience, I had some postpartum anxiety, and I remember having a moment, like, 5 months after my first was born, and I laughed, and it, like, scared my body, because I hadn't felt that joy, you know, that you're talking about, where it just, everything kind of felt like this flat line of like little tiny spikes. And all of a sudden something was real funny. And I was like, whoa, I'm back. Like, whoa, I didn't realize how off I was. And when I said that to multiple people, they were like, yeah. My doctor said something like, yeah, you were off. My friend was like, yeah, when I visited you, it seemed off. But you know, like, you're tired because you have a baby and whatever. And so I'm curious what you would say to people if you are noticing it in your family or friends. Or, you know, is that normal to not notice it in yourself and have other people notice it first?
A little column A, a little column B. I feel like I've said that twice already. I'm very diplomatic. But I do think it is normal for our loved ones to notice it before we do, because we like to normalize our own behavior and just start to roll with the punches. That's literally like a brain chemistry thing. Like, if you go out on a Friday and you make a fool of yourself, your brain is going to want to do the same thing next Friday, just because we like to normalize our own behavior and start to make it not a big deal. So we can normalize our own depression. Warning signs are isolation. Are you canceling events? Are you withdrawing a little more? Are your friends noticing that you're not around? Is your family noticing you're not around? Probably a good time to check in. Are you seeing excessive crying? Can be a warning sign. So proportional like emotional reactions to the situation. So like, I spilled my milk and now I'm sobbing in the kitchen, right? Motor function is a big one. If you notice your loved one is speaking more slowly or moving more slowly, that's a warning sign of depression. Suicidal thoughts or passive suicidal statements like, I want to die, or it would be better off if I just wasn't here, or I didn't wake up tomorrow, is a warning sign. So starting to call out that behavior lovingly. Things you don't want to say to people with depression: you have no reason to be sad. We've all had it bad. Your life looks perfect. There's no way you could be depressed, right? What we want to do is say, hey, I've noticed X thing that feels a little off about you. I want to support you. Are you okay? Do you need to talk? How can I make your life easier, right? We want to pull in with action steps and validation. Irritability is another one that not a lot of people know about. But if you're quickly snapping on other people, like, I wish, and it's tough when you first have a child. So many people are like, okay, you know, that's a whole thing. They're going to feel stuff. But what would it have looked like for you if someone said like, hey, I've noticed you're feeling really off. Like, how can I support you in this time? Like, would you have been like, oh my God, I really needed to hear that, you know?
I feel like in that time, I probably would have faked like, no, I'm totally fine. I'm just, you know, it's a lot and trying to seem like I'm this perfect mom and no, I've got it all together. But I think when they would have left, I would have been like, mm-hmm. Oh, people are noticing. Wow. You know, I think it might have like cued me into how off I was, you know, and maybe in the moment, I feel like in the moment I probably would have sucked and I would have been like, do you think I'm a bad mom? You know, because I was just insecure and anxious and tired. And but I do think it would have been, that person loves me, and the way they said it was, you know, really sweet. And why am I faking that I'm okay? I'm not, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I think it would have been powerful in that moment. Who knows how it would have reacted, but in the grand scheme, I think it would have been really nice if someone said something.
Would have got you thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that awareness piece, like what Alexa is saying. I love how you said too, it's the validating and then the action steps. And also personalizing to what do you need? You know, I think a lot of times it can be overwhelming for people to, oh, I can do this for you or this or this, or have you tried this? Like that was kind of my own experience, was like, of course I've tried these things, or it's I'm not like, doing enough.
You're not doing enough.
Yeah. Yes. And so to ask that question of how can I support you? Like what would be helpful right now? Like what could I take off your plate? Kind of those open-ended questions. It's so helpful. And it's, again, so simple. Our brain likes to make things complex is what I'm learning. The ego, it likes to just make things complex.
Totally.
Absolutely. Nailed it.
Yeah. Well, this is something I wish I had years ago. So I'm so grateful that our listeners are getting a piece of you. Thank you so, so much for sitting down and chatting. For our listeners who want more of you, where can they find you?
Sure. So I am on Instagram at Your Sad Therapist, YOUR Sad Therapist. I recently started a TikTok, which I immediately went viral on, which was so cool. So. And that's at Your Sad Healer. So that's you are sad healer. Okay. So I have some crossover content. I have like more funnier stuff on TikTok. My Instagram's a little more professional, but you can find me on both those platforms.
Ooh, that's awesome. We'll link both of those in our show notes and in our blog. So be sure to check those out. And next up, we have our three gold stars, Alexa. So these are your three takeaways. If you would like to share them with our listeners, go ahead.
So first one is curiosity is your best friend. Learn to be curious with your symptoms and with your feelings. So that means not judging them. That means not shaming them. That means not feeling guilt over them. It means like, oh, what am I feeling right now? Where is this coming from? Andrea, you literally talked about it with your children. Where is that frustration coming from? Can you pinpoint it? Do that with yourself and try to be really curious with your feelings rather than shaming them. Two, be compassionate with your symptoms, radical self-love. Do not judge them. Do not shame them. Pair your curiosity with compassion. You are doing enough. You are doing enough. You are doing enough. And three, consistency and accountability is the way to the light. So making sure you're making time for consistent action, even if that action is, I'm going to feed myself today. Do that every day for a week and maybe add something else. But the curiosity and the compassion doesn't work if it's not partnered with accountability.
God. I love the way you talk. I just want like, I want you to be my therapist. I just want to call you every day and just get like a 5-minute pep talk just to start my day with Alexa. Oh my God.
Well, you can follow her on TikTok.
Yes.
Follow me on TikTok.
Yes. Oh, those are awesome. Yes. I love, 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 love those.
Yeah. Next up is Unleashing Ivy. I have like a juicy question that I cannot wait to ask you about because I know people in my life wonder these things too. So mine is about depression and alcohol, which sounds like you are a complete expert in both these fields. So I'm so excited. So I know people like say, oh, alcohol's a depressant. So of course I'm depressed after I drink alcohol, which I know the depressant means it just slows down your system and your heart rate doesn't actually make you depressed. But there is a connection here, right? Sometimes if you drink too much the next day, you're feeling down, you're feeling depressed. And I personally have noticed this with my relationship with alcohol lately, which is why I'm not drinking this month, is that I get really hard on myself. I get down. I feel lethargic. I feel all of these negative emotions the next day, anxious, all kinds of things. And so I'm curious about the connection of alcohol and depression and like what you experienced with that. And if you have any input for me and the listeners on it.
Yeah, really great question. I couldn't speak to the, does alcohol cause depression? It does certainly not help it if you're experiencing it. If we're using substances in any form, even alcohol or marijuana, legal substances, to cope with our depression. There is research that shows that like it doesn't actually help. It makes it worse in the long term. And not to shame anyone who's like coping with alcohol or drugs right now. Like, do you? I'm big on harm reduction and like finding the ways to keep us alive, essentially, if we need to. My own personal experience with literally hangovers is that like the extreme physical component of a hangover is going to kickstart mental health symptoms. And this is this mind-body connection again, which is like when I feel like shit, when I feel like I lost control or even just didn't feel like myself, you've got the shame kicking up, you've got the lethargy, the fatigue, the anxious thoughts, the anxiety the next day. Like, I do think there's a really real component between like how alcohol physically makes us feel and how that plays into our mental health symptoms. But anyone saying like, oh, my depression is caused by alcohol, it's a chicken or the egg. If you're an everyday drinker and you have a serious alcohol problem, let's get you sober and let's see if the depression persists, because sometimes it won't. But if you're just experiencing like hangover depression or hangover anxiety, I would venture to say total hypothesis that the physical effect that alcohol had on you is causing a mental health reaction.
Love that.
That's powerful. Mm-hmm. All right. My question is, what is the, I know this is probably going to be hard, but the biggest thing that has made the difference for you in getting sober and being in recovery for depression?
I already said it, which is like, I came to a firm realization that my negative emotions won't kill me. Mm-hmm. My whole life was spent outrunning the negative things that I felt, which is why I fell into drugs and alcohol, because the idea that I would have to experience anything other than happiness was too much to bear. So it's constantly chasing euphoria. And when I got sober at 25 and everything kind of clicked together, the realization of like, this is going to suck. This is just going to suck for a little bit. And it did. It sucked for like 18 months, 2 years. Like, it was a lot of brain rewiring that I had to do. But when I integrated, like, this is going to be really hard and you're just going to have to do it anyway, is when I started to see real change. So harness the power of your negative emotions. They're there to teach you something. We learn the most from adversity, not from the times that we are like happy on top of the mountain, you know?
Mm-hmm. Gosh, man, love that. All right. And last question, Alexa, what is one thing you wish you would have known sooner?
I don't know that I could have known anything sooner, because I'm sure people tried to tell me and I just didn't hear them. I guess what I would like to have done sooner is explore my relationship with my body, because I think it took me a while for me to understand that like tapping into my nervous system and the way that I regulate emotions through my nervous system and attachment really helped me gain control over my life. That mind-body connection that we talked about, that's a huge part of trauma work. Like, bottom-up trauma processing has to deal with like, we regulate the nervous system before we even get to talk therapy. So like, I wish that I had noticed sooner that my body was screaming for attention and started that work earlier in my life. But if you had handed me a book on it at 22, I would have been like, get out of here. So,
yeah. I think of that too every time we ask this question, because I do think you have to be in the right point of your life to hear things. Like, you hear everything, and things are placed in your path at the exact time that you were supposed to get them.
Oh, you hear them 65 times and then you actually hear them one day.
Like, oh, that's so smart. Yeah, you've been hearing that for years.
Oh, Alexa, I feel like I could talk to you forever. And I feel like from every question I asked you, I have 75 more. And so I just thank you for all of the information you provided. I think it's mind-blowing to think about just the different ways we can navigate mental health and depression, and to think of it so differently. I feel like you put a completely different spin on it for me of what it can feel like, what it can look like. And so I'm just so thankful for your time and the way that you speak. And I just want more of you.
Well, thank you so much, ladies. It has been my absolute honor to speak with you. So thank you for having me on.
You are so welcome. And thank you for being vulnerable and normalizing that it's okay to be feeling this way. And there is light, and there's ways to get there if you're open to it. Mm-hmm. You're open to doing that work and being vulnerable yourself. Mm-hmm. All right, Alexa, we leave our listeners with a piece of gold. Would you like to share yours with us?
Yeah. So, of course, I had to go with my girl, Brené Brown. She is a social worker. I am a social worker. I secretly pretend she's my mentor. But one quote that I love from her is, owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing that we will ever do. And that just really speaks to, like, getting to know yourself, owning what you've been through, owning everything that's caused you adversity, and just recognizing how effing brave you are for doing that.
This is Gold Ivy signing off.
Listen to your truth and go chase your gold.